And good morning. I am not alone here at the Minnesota State Fair, our broadcast center. I'm going to give you our phone number and our text number in just a moment. But it's good to see Julie and John this morning. And Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, John Trappi from the U of M. And maybe to make it a little more precise, Julie, good morning.
Yeah,
John,
good morning,
Jenny. Good to see you guys. It's
good
been
morning.
3 years since we've been here.
I know it. It's exciting to be back.
It really is. And but for those that don't know, of course, Julie Weisenhorn has been with us for many years answering those lawn and garden questions. And they came in, the text started coming in about 2 hours ago, as a matter of fact.
Awesome.
But for those that don't know, John, maybe you could do a little introduction for us, Julie.
Yeah, Dr. John Trappi, he is my colleague, friend, and our turf educator in Extension. And has been on the show before. Was on the show before you actually were in Extension.
That's correct.
And yeah. Then you went off and did something for a while and came back to us. So we're happy you're here.
Very happy to be back.
Going on your 1 year anniversary, I think, pretty
coming
much.
Coming up fast.
Cool.
Yeah, so if you do have a specifically a lawn question, a turf question, this is your day.
He's a guy.
Yeah, to call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Certainly anybody here at the fair, if you want to come up and ask a question, a lawn and garden question, we'll do it here as well. As our usual phone call and text messages. And we got, as I mentioned, we had a text I thought was an interesting question earlier this morning. This came in, and maybe we could talk about this one. The question is, what can we do in our own yards to help combat climate change?
Oh,
very timely question.
Big question. Well, one of the first things that you can do is certainly choose plants that are resilient to the changing climate. So we have these big extremes. We have extreme rains where we get lots and lots of water all at one time, and then we can go into a drought after that. And then we have droughts. So we have plants. That's pretty hard on plants. It's hard on humans too, but it's hard on plants too. So choosing plants that grow really well in your conditions that you have, and then can tolerate these big swings in moisture. That's one of the things we can certainly do. That will make the plants more resilient, less susceptible to pests, less pesticide use, and you'll also have a better performing landscape through these difficult times.
Yeah, and for lawns, it really just echoes the exact same thing there. It's your biggest impact on reducing your environmental imprint or footprint is the turf grass species and cultivar that you have planted there. And there's a lot of great options, a lot of newer improved cultivars that are needing less mowing, less fertilizer, fewer pesticides. So planting things like that is your biggest impact or your biggest potential change there. And those, just to, you know, not to bury the lead or anything, but those are fine fescues and turf-type tall fescues are those low-input turf grasses.
You know, I think about the last couple of summers, actually, with this lack of rainfall,
right.
And my front yard does not look good. And you've heard this song before, I know, both of you. But what can we do? Can that ever come back? I mean, what can we do maybe over the fall and winter to help in the spring for that lawn to come back?
So, you know, the last three summers have certainly been, and winters for that matter, have been really rough on our lawns. And so as a result, you know, we've just been slowly chipping away and losing some turf grasses. And they've been replaced by invasive weeds, for example, like crabgrass or foxtail. So the best, and the fall is the best time to try to recover your lawn. And so, you know, they may look really rough right now because we're, you know, back again into a little bit of a drought stretch. But, you know, they may be dormant. They may actually be recovering if we get a little bit more regular rainfall this fall. But the big thing is to focus on proper fertilization this fall. Maybe do some weed control for perennial broadleaf weeds. And then just set yourself up for next year. Because having a great lawn starts the previous fall. And right now, literally this week is the ideal time to start doing that.
And you said it again, you've mentioned this before too, and Julie has too. Fertilization, lawn fertilization, is really fall. I mean, if I were to decide spring or fall would be better, right? For
absolutely.
The lawn.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're basically, you know, establishing that root system that is going to be more drought tolerant next year is by fertilizing, filling in those voids. Any open spaces that may have happened and trying to make a place where weeds can't get into.
And I think sometimes, too, it's choosing, deciding where plants will do the best. So it's choosing the right plant for the right place. A lot of people have heard that before. So in some cases, you want to put your lawn in an optimal location. Full sun, don't plant it under trees. Use mulch and use some shade-tolerant perennials under those trees just because it's too hard on the grass to grow. And it's really hard on your trees, too. And trees are another way that we can actually do a really good job of countering some of the effects of climate change in our own backyards. We can add shade. They can be energy savings. They can protect your house. They can shade your home. And they also provide huge habitat for important beneficial insects, birds, and animals.
You know, one thing, maybe this is a good point to talk about the university website, because I've used that over the years to think, now, what about this shrub here? What about this? Or tomato plants, for that matter, or whatever. That is really, you and your colleagues have put in a lot of good, you know, labors of love getting that. Let me just mention it, extension.umn.edu. If you've never checked it out, do so. Do it today. And a lot of good stuff on there.
Excellent information.
Yeah,
and if you've
never checked it out, do so. Do it today. And a lot of good stuff on there.
Excellent information.
Yeah,
and if you're going to come down to the fair, we do have in the Agriculture and Horticulture Building. We have Ask a Master Gardener, and the Turfgrass booth has turfgrass experts answering questions. So if you're here at the State Fair, it's a great opportunity.
I'm glad, John, you brought that up at the Ag Hort Building, and Master Gardeners. We've said it before, because I've always thought Master Gardeners over the years were these people that knew all this great stuff that I don't know. And that's still true, but you guys and your colleagues, rather, are educators. That's what you do.
We are. That's our job, is to help people solve problems. So we enjoy doing the detective work.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, this is your hour. Whether it be lawns or gardens, you can call or text 651-461-9226. At last report, by the way, you guys found it a little cool here this morning,
yeah,
right?
Quite a difference here today.
Last couple of days. Officially, we have 62 degrees, and 74 will be the predicted high today.
Yeah, that's a good day in Minnesota.
We've already had huge crowds here at the fair, and the sun is out. And if you pick today as the day, today and tomorrow, for that matter, coming to the fair, you are in luck. Stay with us here. News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Denny Long back with Julie Weisenhorn, John Trappi from the University of Minnesota. We are talking lawns and gardens, getting a lot of questions, not only by phone and by text, but here at the fair as well. In fact, Julie, you got visited by a listener out here.
Yeah, one of our listeners right out here in the audience asked about planting trees. And as I understand the question, they're planting 6 maple trees, autumn blaze maples, which are great choices for landscapes, and wanted to know how to plant them. So one of the important things about trees is not to plant them too deeply. So trees come in containers. Sometimes you have to remove some of the soil in the containers because the plant has been growing deeply in this container for quite a while. And so you want to feel that, you want to look at that plant, take it out of the container, and remove any of the topsoil that you see that might be covering up what's called the root flare. That's the point at which, at the base of the trunk, that the roots flare out from the base. So think of like just a flare. And you want those roots to be at surface level. So you don't want to bury those too deeply. That's a sure bet that you're going to eventually kill the tree by burying it too deeply. So make sure that root flare, you might have to take some of that soil out, remember, and then make sure that root flare is growing. Now, one of the other things, too, is that you might find in that container some roots that are circling around after you dig out those roots. You want to prune those off. That's okay to do that. You're not going to hurt the tree, so that you don't encourage these what are called stem girdling roots to develop around that. Sometimes it happens that when the plant is buried so deeply, those stem girdling roots kind of raise up above the root flare and start to choke the tree. So, and then you want to plant it at the level of the root flare and dig a wider hole rather than a deeper hole. So about twice as wide as the tree, and set that at the same level with that root flare showing, so that it sits just slightly above the surface of the soil. You can backfill it with the same soil that you took out. You don't need to necessarily amend it. And then you definitely want to water those trees. So we have a great web page called Water Wisely, and it includes watering newly planted trees, and definitely follow the guidelines. There's actual measurements. You measure the trunk, and then you can look and see how much water your tree is going to need every single day for a period of time, and especially as we go into the fall. So you can just follow that. It's a nice grid there that you can just follow that chart, and then be sure to water those trees. And last but not least, mulch the tree. Put wood mulch around it. Make a nice big ring around it, at least 6 feet, even though it looks like it might be really large for those smaller trees that you're planting. But that's going to really encourage. It's going to protect the roots. It's going to also keep that soil moisture in the soil. And also it's going to cool the roots, too. As we have hot days, you'll be amazed when you feel that soil under that mulch, how cool it is. And that's important for reducing the transplant stress of trees.
All right, very good. Thanks for the question. Let's grab a phone call or two. I believe Steve's calling in from Greenwood this morning. Steve, thanks for waiting. What's your question?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Earlier this summer, we had a weird plant growing. And here I find out it's a moonflower. And those flowers are so pretty. And now we got, we must have 8-10 coming all the time, but they only last a day or two. And then they got those green, like golf ball size, spiny balls. I presume are the seed pods. And I'm just wondering, how do I take care of those? And then either plant them in the fall or plant them in the spring so I can keep that moonflower going.
So the moonflower is a part of the morning glory family. And so it will produce its own seeds from those pods, and it will drop them all over the place. You will always have moonflowers forever and ever. That's just part of the way that the plant keeps its prodigy going, I guess. And so you can collect those pods when they're dry, and you can save those seeds, open them up and save those seeds in a cool, dry place. But really, you're not going to need to do anything. The plant will totally take care of itself.
All right. 651-461-9226. That's a phone call, and that's a text number as well. So either whichever is easy, or come to the right up at our broadcast center here and ask your question live from the fair. Grab another phone call. Dan's calling in from Cologne, Minnesota, I believe, this morning. Hi, Dan. What's your question?
Good morning. How easy is it to have just an organic grass in your yard rather than spraying herbicides and all these other things that my neighbors do? And it's really, I don't think it can be very healthy to do all that insecticide, pesticide, herbicide, or whatever it is they're putting on their lawn.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So there's a number of lawn care companies that have very successful businesses running purely organic programs. So it's certainly doable. And I don't think you have to be a professional to do that. I will say that it really helps to have a nice starting point, because once you remove the option for herbicides, removing the pests, there's really very few organic options for selective weed control in lawns. So, but really, proper fertilization and mowing, the same cultural practices we recommend, whether you're using pesticides or synthetic fertilizers or not, we still recommend the same things. I would recommend something like a fine fescue or a turf-type tall fescue. For those to, just because those are fairly low input, and they can provide an area that is a little bit more difficult for weeds to encroach. Proper fertilization is the really key there, and there's a number of organic fertilizer sources out there. Just keep in mind that many organic fertilizer sources are manure-based, and those would have phosphorus in them. And Minnesota has a phosphorus fertilizer law that restricts how much fertilizer or phosphorus fertilizer you can apply to home lawns, provided they you do not have a soil, or if you have a soil test showing that you have a phosphorus deficiency, you can use them. Or if it's a new establishment, you can use phosphorus-containing fertilizers. Otherwise, that's kind of a limitation with the organic method of having a lawn.
All right, very good. Great questions today. We have a lot of them. Here's another one, text-wise. We planted juniper bushes last July and noticed this year that their outer branches and needles look mostly green and healthy, but the inner branches and needles on several of them are brown. Do you know if this is normal for junipers, or with the drought, does it mean we need to water them more often?
Yeah, junipers are a great landscape plant. They're pretty tough. They can tolerate a lot. The good news is that you have new growth on the ends of these plants. So I'm guessing that the needles themselves have died, and you can just let those fall naturally. Be sure to be watering plants well. And what does that mean? That means feeling the soil underneath them, and especially with woody plants, is watering so that the top 6 to 9 inches is saturated. Top 6 to 9 inches of soil is saturated. And that will provide good moisture for those plants. These plants have to hang on to their needles through the winter. So you want to be sure that you're really giving them good water throughout the entire growing season. Sometimes we kind of get nervous and we go, oh my gosh, fall's coming. I've got to water my evergreens. And you start dumping tons of water on the plants. You actually want to be doing good routine watering throughout the entire summer. So think of that for next year. But in the meantime, yes, definitely this juniper is probably fine as long as you see that new growth at the tips, but it's the needles that have actually dried up, probably from the heat that we've had this year. And maybe if these plants were planted in July of 2022, then it was probably a lot of winter damage too. We had a lot of snow, and that could have also caused it too. But I'm guessing the plant is going to be fine, may not look so hot for a while, but it'll come back.
Not a lawn and garden question. We didn't ask you to bring your guitar today, but I know the Abiders are playing today,
right,
no less, right?
Yes, we are. We're playing for a public event called the Carp Fest. And it's not to celebrate carp. It's to help raise funds for a carp project that we're collaborating. We have a neighborhood association out on Lake Minnetonka, the Harrison Bay Association. And we're collaborating with the University of Minnesota Invasive Species Group to do some research on how to eliminate the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands
or
of
thousands
carp
and thousands,
that we have in our end of the bay.
When,
so
when and where now?
We are playing, you can actually, if you have a boat or a kayak or you want to go to Centerview Park in Mound, Minnesota, you can go and listen to us. We're playing right along the lakeside at a private location. And you'll be able to hear us across the water. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, so it should be pretty cool.
Well, you're going to have a perfect day for that.
It's going to be awesome. We all play right from 2 to 5.
Hang on, everybody. We're going to take a break. We're live from the Minnesota State Fair. We have about another half hour of the Lawn and Garden Show live from the fair here. Hang on, everybody. We're going to take a break. We're live from the Minnesota State Fair. We have about another half hour of the Lawn and Garden Show live from the fair here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Some things never change when you're live at the State Fair. Live radio. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We're here every Saturday, not here at the fair, but we're on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Any kind of a lawn or garden question today, because we have Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M and John Traffy, our turf guru. You don't mind that, John.
The guru of
yeah,
green.
Sure. I don't mind it.
Okay. From the U of M. So if you have any kind of a lawn or turf question, today is your day. And we have that very thing right here. This listener is planning on aerating and overseeding in the late fall. Now, I plan on using, they say, a starter fertilizer. Is that okay for the last fertilization application for the winter?
It can be so. And, you know, I would caution the timing of when you're overseeding, because you either want to aerate and overseed, let's say, middle of September, or you want to aerate, you know, middle of September, and then overseed as a what would be considered a dormant seeding in early November. It's really just when you want the grass to germinate. If you're seeding now, you'd want it to germinate, emerge this fall. If you're doing it in early November, you're effectively waiting until the springtime for it to germinate and emerge. And the starter fertilizer, like I said, if you are if it's just a renovation, it's not a new establishment. That starter fertilizer, unless you have a soil test report showing a deficiency of phosphorus, just make sure the starter fertilizer doesn't have phosphorus in it. But otherwise, that's a great strategy and one that's you know, really been used for decades for improving a lawn.
And you've talked about the phosphorus, and that's because we have phosphorus in our soil naturally.
Yeah, we have Minnesota's for the vast majority of the state, unless you're in kind of the sand plains, the vast majority of Minnesota soils are very high phosphorus. So having phosphorus fertilizer, you know, phosphorus in your fertilizer is literally just, you know, if the soil already has enough, the plants are able to take that up. You're really just wasting money if you're.
Well, that's good to know. I didn't know that before.
One thing too, I visited the soil testing lab this past week with some master gardeners, and Keith, who runs the lab, he's a research manager there. He is really recommending fall soil tests for a couple reasons. One is that the results are extremely accurate, just like they are throughout the year, but also because you miss that whole rush of spring where you've got a lot of, you know, out at the soil testing lab, they have lots of agricultural tests, they have tons of research tests, but, you know, get your soil tests done now. It's ready for spring. You don't have to worry about it in the spring. Mm. And we just wrote an article about that in our Yard and Garden News from our website.
What's the process of getting your soil tested?
So do you want to address that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, the University of Minnesota Soil Testing Laboratory has a webpage with for all of the instructions for wherever you're collecting a sample, whether it's your lawn, your garden, or if you have a pasture or an ag field, any of those spaces might have slightly different recommendations for which test you would have conducted. But really, the process of collecting a soil sample is really simple, really similar across those areas. You're really trying to get a representative sample. So what that means is you'd go out and collect 5 to 10 for an average-sized lawn or garden, 5 to 10 soil samples within the top couple of inches where the plant roots are typically at. And you're going to make a composite sample and then send that in. And that's a, you know, and typically they're $17 to $20 per soil test sample. You can get the test results back in just sometimes in a week. Sometimes it's a little bit longer than that. But it's a very simple process, and there are instructions online.
Very reasonably priced.
Yeah, wow. And we also have good videos that talk about how to take a soil sample, show you how to do it, and then also how to interpret the results that you get. So that's a brand new video that was out.
Right.
So those are some helpful tools for people because sometimes they are like, it's been a long time since I had chemistry.
Now, is that information available on the website?
It is, well? Yes. It's okay. Under on our website and, yeah, under the nutrients section.
All right. Extension.umn.edu.
Extension.umn.edu. You betcha.
Let's grab a phone call from Frank calling in. I believe he's still there, calling in from Roseville. Hi, Frank. What is your question this morning?
Hi, good morning. Yes, this year I've had a mushroom explosion in my yard, and I'm just wondering if you covered this topic before. I didn't hear it, but I'm just wondering what might have caused that.
Well, those mushrooms in your yard are typically coming from what's called fairy ring, and it's a basidiomycete fungi that basically grows in a circle, and that circle just gradually gets bigger and bigger each year. But they're most often white or cream-colored mushrooms, but there's really no negative effects to your lawn for where those are at. It's really just kind of the nuisance of the eyesore of seeing them. You know, a lot of people, I have actually been getting a lot of questions about them this year, so for whatever reason, they're a little bit more prominent. But generally, once you have them, it's a soil fungi. It's going to be around forever. There's really nothing you can do to treat them, to try to remove them. But it's not that you would really want to do that anyways because, like I said, there's no negative effects.
I think sometimes two people have been seeing mushrooms growing in their mulch, in their beds, and usually that means that you're overwatering that area. So you can kind of back off on the watering. Remember that mulch does a really good job at holding in moisture. If you see those mushrooms popping up in your mulch, just pick them off, put on some gloves, pick them out, or just kick them over. That's what I do.
Not a big surprise to Julie when we have John on the air that we get a ton of, and we ask for it, right?
Yep. I'm
so
good
we have,
with that.
I'm going to give you a whole string of lawn questions now, and then we'll get back to others. This one, how do I get rid of quack grass? First of all, what's quack grass look like?
So quack grass is, most often you'll notice it first along driveways, sidewalks, or the road. It's a little bit more drought tolerant, a little bit more heat tolerant. And it's a grass that spreads by really long, deep rhizomes. And you can identify it because it grows faster than your typical lawn grasses. And it's, you know, it's a little bit lighter green color. It has what we call clasping auricles. It's how the leaf attaches to the stem of the plant. And as far as how to control it, I have some unfortunate news that there really is no selective measure for trying to remove quackgrass from your lawn without hurting the rest of your lawn itself. So non-selective herbicides like glyphosate or Roundup, those are going to be your best option, but that would have to involve having to reseed that area after controlling the quackgrass. But it's going to take several applications over several weeks because of those deep rhizomes.
And it's hard to dig out.
Yeah, and yeah, thanks, Julie. So it's really difficult to try to manually pull that weed. It's not something that you can just do from an organic or a manual removal.
Is there ever any discussion about a quackgrass lawn?
There's actually been so quackgrass is considered a noxious weed, so limitations on
what you can't do that then.
so there's limitations on what you can do from a plant breeding and commercialization of a cultivar, right. But there have actually been some attempts for quackgrass for trying to get special exemption for that, because if it's, you know, trying to take the strategy of you can't beat them, join them. But I don't think that that's going anywhere just
wow.
yet.
Another turf question this morning. I'm doing dormant seeding this winter. What's the best seed to use?
I would say, you know, it kind of depends on what you're looking to do with the strategy. I think, you know, I've already mentioned the fine fescues and the turf type tall fescues twice this morning. But, you know, I'm a big advocate for those just because I think that they're a great fit for most people's uses of their lawn. Whether they've got three kids and a golden retriever, or they're just using their lawn from an aesthetic or, you know, their own personal enjoyment. So I think those are great fits. If you have a little bit more drought or higher heat conditions, a little bit more traffic, I would lean a little bit more towards the turf-type tall fescues. But for the most part, the fine fescues are super well adapted for most people's uses as well.
And we use both of these grasses out at the Foodscape, which is a new development, a new garden, not development, but a new garden that we've put together out at the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum at the farm at the Arb. And it's amazing. The tall turf type fescue looks just like a beautiful lawn. It's not like the fescues that the tall fescues that we think of as these big coarse plants.
Yeah, the tall fescue was originally bred for as a forage grass, and so we've been, you know, we have a different strategy for trying to breed turf grasses for lawns, because we don't want a grass that grows and produces a lot of biomass that needs to be mowed all the time. So, you know, our strategies are a little bit different, and so we've been working on breeding finer texture turf type tall fescues that also are low input.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
And I'm glad you brought up the Arboretum. We haven't talked about the Arb today, and that this has got to be a beautiful time to see the Arboretum.
It's a great time to come. You know, late summer is a fabulous place to see some of the more drier, the more drought-tolerant plants, some of the pollinator plants that really are blooming. The prairie is gorgeous. And also the gardens around the building, too. There's, you know, we go through these cycles of we come from the tulip bulbs in the spring, and now we're into these more asters, goldenrod, some of the really beautiful fall colors that we have out there. And the trees, when they start to turn, then we'll be looking at those too. So it's a great time to be there.
And if you're going to get out there, if you're new to the Arboretum, you have to register online. But it really makes parking so easy. I've said it before.
It does. Yeah, if you're going to visit the Arboretum, whether you're a member or not, you want to go ahead on arb.umn.edu and just click on Get Tickets. And that's going to step you through the process of getting tickets. If you're a member, they're free. It's simply kind of reserving your space at the Arboretum. And if you are not a member, you may find that you should be a member. It's simply kind of reserving your space at the Arboretum. And if you are not a member, you may find that you should be a member, because then you can it makes it even easier to go to the Arboretum.
It's a great place to visit and bring family and friends.
And bring family. Yeah. It's a great place to bring people from out of town, especially. They're always floored.
Yeah. We 64 degrees now in the Twin Cities. Cool. We feel that the breeze. It's a cool breeze.
I'm not gonna
here
complain.
At the fair. No, but nobody's complaining. We're going to have more lawn and garden questions right after the break, so stay with us here. Live from the fair, News Talk 830 And a good Saturday morning to you. We're back live from the Minnesota State Fair in the midst of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, at least on CCO, not every Saturday at the fair. It would be kind of lonesome
no.
here.
Yeah.
A couple of months from now.
Everything would be closed.
We have Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi, both from the University of Minnesota. We're talking really lawns and gardens. A lot of lawn questions. And I wonder, John
Sorry,
and Julie, if...
That's all right. I'm good with that.
If it's maybe because of all this dry weather we've had for the last 2 or 3 years. It's been really tough. Anyway, here's another one. Established lawn, average lawn irrigation system, sandy soil... with even slash odd watering restrictions, would it be better to water 15 to 20 minutes per zone every other day or for 30 to 40 minutes per zone every fourth day?
Whoa, that sounds like a softball question, like a canned question, because that is like perfect for trying to educate homeowners on how to water their lawn. So the ideal watering, if you are going to intermittently water your lawn, is to do that deeply and infrequently, because you're trying to train the grass roots to grow deeper. And if you're watering every day or every other day, the plants are going to know that they're just expecting the water. So, you know, their roots are going to be very shallow. Whereas if you're watering further time frame, you know, further number of days between watering events, the roots for the plants will actually be growing deeper. And you can train them starting in the spring throughout the year. And so training them by watering a little bit higher volume of water more infrequently. And how frequent that is should really depend on your individual site. So this homeowner sounds like they have sandy soils, so it might be a little bit more frequent than somebody who has a silty clay loam soil, for example. But that's the overall strategy, and how much and how often you're watering really is a site-specific question. I would recommend just literally going out and digging before you water and then again after, and just dig down, and you should be able to see how deep is the water getting, and you can train how much or how deep the roots are going
to
grow.
Would it help, too, to maybe top dress the lawn with some compost to build in some organic matter into the sand?
There can be. I mean, grasses themselves are inherently really good at building organic matter. The natural prairies that we have that made the really great soils that we have in Minnesota and the upper Midwest in general, those were grasses. And they have the same growing pattern that our lawns do, just a high turnover of roots that produce a lot of organic matter over time.
Yeah. All right, Julie, here's one for you. When is the best time to plant new perennials in my flower garden? Should I plant them in the fall or spring? Also, the best time to transplant perennials?
Well, the transplant question depends on the type of perennial. Some perennials really don't transplant very well. They have big, fleshy roots. For example, peonies are difficult to transplant. Butterfly weed, Asclepias tuberosa, is difficult to transplant. Baptisia. But you can do it. We have a good webpage on dividing perennials, and it talks about when to divide plants, and that will give you an idea of some plants don't ever want to be divided. So transplanting them kind of goes along with that you wouldn't want to transplant those either. But you can still plant now in the fall. There's some really good deals at your local garden centers, and so you can still do some planting. You do want to water those plants in well, mulch them. You probably have... maybe a couple, 2-3 weeks left to do that, because you want those plants to reestablish their root systems to carry them through the winter, because they're going to go dormant then as soon as it starts to get cold. And we want to be sure that they've established themselves back in those new locations. Spring is really the best time to do the planting, because the plants have the entire summer to get established and go through the growing system, growing season, and then go into natural dormancy. So spring is the best. You can still do some planting now, though.
All right, here's another one for John, Julie. Just purchased a new home full of crabgrass. I know it's an annual, but is there anything I can do about it now? There's too much to pull, and it grows too low for the lawnmower to cut off the seed heads.
It's kind of flat.
Yeah, so crabgrass is a summer annual, so it germinates in the spring, it grows, develops, reproduces in the early fall, and is dropping the seed. It's going to die. It's basically already started to slow down its growth. So controlling it right now is not advised, because it's going to die anyways, especially by the first frost. So the best thing to do with crabgrass is to have a dense, healthy turf to begin with. And I would start doing that this fall with proper fertilization. You could look at using a pre-emergent next spring, a pre-emergent herbicide. But I would honestly just try to get a solid lawn established. make sure you have a proper mowing height of 3 to 4 inches at least, because crabgrass loves a lower mowing height for turf. So those are your cultural practices. There are some, like I said, pre-emergent herbicides for next spring, but the best defense or the best thing weed control mechanism is a dense, healthy turf.
You know, we have a few questions about trees. Folks wondering, is this diseased or could it be getting a disease? Would you recommend getting an arborist out to your house?
Yeah, absolutely. In Minnesota, we're fortunate to have a lot of certified arborists. An arborist is kind of like a tree doctor. They go out, they assess trees. They can look at a tree and assess it for health. They can assess it for structure if you're concerned it might be hazardous. And they can also do pruning for you. And they can also advise on planting, too, and also on types of trees that would be good for your location. So a certified arborist is really valuable. You can find information on that. We have a good webpage on extension.umn.edu called How to Hire a Tree Care Professional. And there's a link there where you can put in your zip code and come up with any and all arborists that are in your area. So it gives you a head start. It's also good if you see people working with tree care companies, and you can ask, you know, if you have friends or neighbors who are having their trees pruned. We just did this on our street. You might want to kind of collaborate with them or find out who they're using to. And that word of mouth is really helpful as well.
A couple of minutes to go on the show here from the fair, and my week and my whole week would not be complete if we didn't attack Creeping Charlie a little bit here. It says, I like to renew my lawn, which is overtaken by Creeping Charlie and crabgrass. I'm thinking of planting buffalo grass. Are you familiar with buffalo grass, and do you think it would work in our climate?
So buffalo grass, I think it largely depends on where this question is coming from. So it is a native turf grass. It's one of the only native turf grasses. It's very low input, but it's a little bit more difficult to establish. It grows best in kind of the western, southwestern, southern parts of Minnesota. So it's a warm season turf grass. It grows best in the summertime. But it is a very low input grass that spreads and creeps and can do well. As far as the Creeping Charlie is concerned, you know, a lot of times that is site specific. So it likes shadier, wetter soils. So if you, you know, if you have those conditions, consider trying to do something to alleviate that problem. Otherwise, there are chemical options for trying to control it. Triclopyr is the name of the active ingredient, the ibuprofen to Advil, that is found in the herbicide. Triclopyr is the name. That's the one that works best. It's best to try to control it this fall or in the fall. And it might take a couple of applications to do that.
All right, we've got 60 seconds to go. Julie, the Abiders are appearing when and where
today?
We're
playing at Carp Fest on Lake Minnetonka at Harrison Bay. And if you got a boat or a kayak or want to go to Centerview Park, you can listen to us from Lakeside. And we start at 2 o'clock.
Get to the Arboretum. That's another point I wanted to make.
Get a reservation for that.
And by all means, check out the university website.
Right.
Give us that again, would you please?
Extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden.
Any final thoughts, John, about maybe getting lawn aerated this fall?
Yeah, it's a pretty good strategy for relieving compaction. It doesn't help much with thatch, but soil compaction, and it can help with renovating an area.
And you've got some information about taking care of your lawns on the website as well, right?
Right.
And
you can visit John in the turf booth.
Yeah,
here
at the State Fair in the Ag Hort Building, you know, we've got turf experts that are answering questions all day, every day. We're between the Apples and the Brewers Guild. So.
Perfect.
Good place to be. All right, good. Thank you both. Good to see you both, Julie and John.
Good to see you, Denny. Thank you.
Thank you.
Get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lindis is going to be joining me live here on our porch or our veranda here at our broadcast center here at the Minnesota State Fair. If you're coming out today, you've got a beautiful day to do that. We have an expected sunshine-filled day with highs near 74, going to be 79 tomorrow. Right now on CCO, sunny. Good morning. I am not alone here at the Minnesota State Fair, our broadcast center. I'm going to give you our phone number and our text number in just a moment, but it's good to see Julie and John this morning, and Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, John Trappi from the U of M, and maybe to make it a little more precise, Julie, good morning.
Yeah,
John,
good morning,
Denny. Good to see you guys.
Good morning.
3 years since we've been here.
I know it. It's exciting to be back.
It really is. And but for those that don't know, of course, Julie Weisenhorn has been with us for many years answering those lawn and garden questions. And they came in, the text started coming in about 2 hours ago, as a matter of fact.
Awesome.
But for those that don't know, John, maybe you could do a little introduction for us, Julie.
Yeah, Dr. John Trappe, he is my colleague, friend, and our turf educator in Extension. And has been on the show before. Was on the show before you actually were in Extension.
That's correct.
And yeah. Then you went off and did something for a while and came back to us. So we're happy you're here.
Very happy to be back.
Going on your 1 year anniversary, I think, pretty
coming
much.
Coming up fast.
Cool.
Yeah, so if you do have a specifically a lawn question, a turf question, this is your day.
He's a guy.
Yeah, to call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Certainly anybody here at the fair, if you want to come up and ask a question, a lawn and garden question, we'll do it here as well. As our usual phone call and text messages. And we got, as I mentioned, we had a text I thought was an interesting question earlier this morning. This came in, and maybe we could talk about this one. The question is, what can we do in our own yards to help combat climate change?
Oh,
very timely question.
Big question. Well, one of the first things that you can do is certainly choose plants that are resilient to the changing climate. So we have these big extremes. We have extreme rains where we get lots and lots of water all at one time, and then we can go into a drought after that. And then we have droughts. So we have plants. That's pretty hard on plants. It's hard on humans too, but it's hard on plants too. So choosing plants that grow really well in your conditions that you have and then can tolerate these big swings in moisture. That's one of the things we can certainly do. That will make the plants more resilient, less susceptible to pests, less pesticide use, and you'll also have a better performing landscape through these difficult times.
Yeah, and for lawns, it really just echoes the exact same thing there. It's your biggest impact on reducing your environmental imprint or footprint is the turf grass species and cultivar that you have planted there. And there's a lot of great options, a lot of newer improved cultivars that are needing less mowing, less fertilizer, fewer pesticides. So planting things like that is your biggest impact or your biggest potential change there. And those, just to, you know, not to bury the lead or anything, but those are fine fescues and turf type tall fescues are those low input turf grasses.
You know, I think about the last couple of summers, actually, with this lack of rainfall,
right.
And my front yard does not look good. And you've heard this song before, I know, both of you. But what can we do? Can that ever come back? I mean, what can we do maybe over the fall and winter to help in the spring for that lawn to come back?
So, you know, the last three summers have certainly been, and winters for that matter, have been really rough on our lawns. And so as a result, you know, we've just been slowly chipping away and losing some turf grasses. And they've been replaced by invasive weeds, for example, like crabgrass or foxtail. So the best, and the fall is the best time to try to recover your lawn. And so, you know, they may look really rough right now because we're, you know, back again into a little bit of a drought stretch. But, you know, they may be dormant. They may actually be recovering if we get a little bit more regular rainfall this fall. But the big thing is to focus on proper fertilization this fall. Maybe do some weed control for perennial broadleaf weeds. And then just set yourself up for next year. Because having a great lawn starts the previous fall. And right now, literally this week is the ideal time to start doing that.
And you said it again, you've mentioned this before too, and Julie has too. Fertilization, lawn fertilization, is really fall. I mean, if I were to decide spring or fall would be better, right? For
absolutely.
The lawn.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're basically, you know, establishing that root system that is going to be more drought tolerant next year is by fertilizing, filling in those voids. Any open spaces that may have happened and trying to make a place where weeds can't get into.
And I think sometimes, too, it's choosing, deciding where plants will do the best. So it's choosing the right plant for the right place. A lot of people have heard that before. So in some cases, you want to put your lawn in an optimal location. Full sun, don't plant it under trees. Use mulch and use some shade-tolerant perennials under those trees. Just because it's too hard on the grass to grow, and it's really hard on your trees too. And trees are another way that we can actually do a really good job of countering some of the effects of climate change in our own backyards. We can add shade. They can be energy savings. They can protect your house. They can shade your home. And they also provide huge habitat for important beneficial insects, birds, and animals.
You know, one thing, maybe this is a good point to talk about the university website, because I've used that over the years to think, now, what about this shrub here? What about this? Or tomato plants, for that matter, or whatever. That is really, you and your colleagues have put in a lot of good, you know, labors of love getting that. Let me just mention it, extension.umn.edu. If you've never checked it out, do so. Do it today. And yeah, a lot of good stuff on there.
Excellent information.
Yeah,
and if you've
never checked it out, do so. Do it today. And yeah, a lot of good stuff on there.
Excellent information.
Yeah,
and if you're going to come down to the fair, we do have an Astor in the Agriculture and Horticulture Building. We have Ask a Master Gardener, and the Turfgrass booth has turfgrass experts answering questions. So if you're here at the State Fair, it's a great opportunity.
I'm glad, John, you brought that up at the Ag Hort Building, and Master Gardeners. We've said it before, because I've always thought Master Gardeners over the years were these people that knew all this great stuff that I don't know. That's still true, but you guys and your colleagues, rather, are educators. That's what you do.
We are. That's our job, is to help people and help people solve problems. So we enjoy doing the detective work.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, this is your hour. Whether it be lawns or gardens, you can call or text 651-461-9226. At last report, by the way, you guys found it a little cool here this morning,
yeah,
right?
Quite a difference here today.
Last couple of days. Officially, we have 62 degrees, and 74 will be the predicted high today.
Yeah, that's a good day in Minnesota.
We've already had huge crowds here at the fair, and the sun is out. And if you pick today as the day, today and tomorrow, for that matter, coming to the fair, you are in luck. Stay with us here, News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Denny Long back with Julie Weisenhorn, John Trappi from the University of Minnesota. We are talking lawns and gardens, getting a lot of questions, not only by phone and by text, but here at the fair as well. In fact, Julie, you got visited by a listener out here.
Yeah, one of our listeners right out here in the audience asked about planting trees. And as I understand the question, they're planting 6 maple trees, autumn blaze maples, which are great choices for landscapes, and wanted to know how to plant them. So one of the important things about trees is not to plant them too deeply. So trees come in containers. Sometimes you have to remove some of the soil in the containers because the plant has been growing deeply in this container for quite a while. And so you want to feel that, you want to look at that plant, take it out of the container, and remove any of the topsoil that you see that might be covering up what's called the root flare. That's the point at which, at the base of the trunk, that the roots flare out from the base. So think of like just a flare. And you want those roots to be at surface level. So you don't want to bury those too deeply. That's a sure bet that you're going to eventually kill the tree by burying it too deeply. So make sure that root flare, you might have to take some of that soil out, remember, and then make sure that root flare is growing. Now, one of the other things, too, is that you might find in that container some roots that are circling around after you dig out those roots. You want to prune those off. That's okay to do that. You're not going to hurt the tree, so that you don't encourage these what are called stem girdling roots to develop around that. Sometimes it happens that when the plant is buried so deeply, those stem girdling roots kind of raise up above the root flare and start to choke the tree. So, and then you want to plant it at the level of the root flare and dig a wider hole rather than a deeper hole. So about twice as wide as the tree, and set that at the same level with that root flare showing, so that it sits just slightly above the surface of the soil. You can backfill it with the same soil that you took out. You don't need to necessarily amend it. And then you definitely want to water those trees. So we have a great webpage called Water Wisely, and it includes watering newly planted trees, and definitely follow the guidelines. There's actual measurements. You measure the trunk, and then you can look and see how much water your tree is going to need every single day for a period of time. and especially as we go into the fall. So you can just follow that. It's a nice grid there that you can just follow that chart, and then be sure to water those trees. And last but not least, mulch the tree. Put wood mulch around it. Make a nice big ring around it, at least 6 feet, even though it looks like it might be really large for those smaller trees that you're planting. But that's going to really encourage. It's going to protect the roots. It's going to also keep that soil moisture in the soil. And also it's going to cool the roots, too. As we have hot days, you'll be amazed when you feel that soil under that mulch, how cool it is. And that's important for reducing the transplant stress of trees.
All right, very good. Thanks for the question. Let's grab a phone call or two. I believe Steve's calling in from Greenwood this morning. Steve, thanks for waiting. What's your question?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Earlier this summer, we had a weird plant growing, and here I find out it's a moonflower. And those flowers are so pretty. And now we got, we must have 8-10 coming all the time, but they only last a day or two. And then they got those green, like golf ball size, spiny balls. I presume are the seed pods. And I'm just wondering, how do I take care of those and then either plant them in the fall or plant them in the spring so I can keep that moonflower going?
So the moonflower is a part of the morning glory family. And so it will produce its own seeds from those pods, and it will drop them all over the place. You will always have moonflowers forever and ever. That's just part of the way that the plant keeps its prodigy going, I guess. And so you can collect those pods when they're dry, and you can save those seeds, open them up and save those seeds in a cool, dry place. But really, you're not going to need to do anything. The plant will totally take care of itself.
All right. 651-461-9226. That's a phone call, and that's a text number as well. So either whichever is easy, or come to the right up at our broadcast center here and ask your question live from the fair. Grab another phone call. Dan's calling in from Cologne, Minnesota, I believe, this morning. Hi, Dan. What's your question?
Good morning. How easy is it to have just an organic grass in your yard rather than spraying herbicides and all these other things that my neighbors do? And it's really, I don't think it can be very healthy to do all that insecticide, pesticide, herbicide, or whatever it is they're putting on their lawn.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So there's a number of lawn care companies that have very successful businesses running purely organic programs. So it's certainly doable. And I don't think you have to be a professional to do that. I will say that it really helps to have a nice starting point, because once you remove the option for herbicides, removing the pests, there's really very few organic options for selective weed control in lawns. So, but really, proper fertilization and mowing, the same cultural practices we recommend, whether you're using pesticides or synthetic fertilizers or not, we still recommend the same things. I would recommend something like a fine fescue or a turf-type tall fescue. For those, to just because those are fairly low input, and they can provide an area that is a little bit more difficult for weeds to encroach. Proper fertilization is the really key there, and there's a number of organic fertilizer sources out there. Just keep in mind that many organic fertilizer sources are manure based, and those would have phosphorus in them. And Minnesota has a phosphorus fertilizer law that restricts how much fertilizer or phosphorus fertilizer you can apply to home lawns, provided you do not have a soil, or if you have a soil test showing that you have a phosphorus deficiency, you can use them. Or if it's a new establishment, you can use phosphorus-containing fertilizers. Otherwise, that's kind of a limitation with the organic method of having a lawn.
All right, very good. Great questions today. We have a lot of them. Here's another one, text-wise. We planted juniper bushes last July and noticed this year that their outer branches and needles look mostly green and healthy, but the inner branches and needles on several of them are brown. Do you know if this is normal for junipers, or with the drought, does it mean we need to water them more often?
Yeah, junipers are a great landscape plant. They're pretty tough. They can tolerate a lot. The good news is that you have new growth on the ends of these plants. So I'm guessing that the needles themselves have died, and you can just let those fall naturally. be sure to be watering plants well. And what does that mean? That means feeling the soil underneath them, and especially with woody plants, is watering so that the top 6 to 9 inches is saturated. Top 6 to 9 inches of soil is saturated. And that will provide good moisture for those plants. These plants have to hang on to their needles through the winter. So you want to be sure that you're really giving them good water throughout the entire growing season. Sometimes we kind of get nervous and we go, oh my gosh, fall's coming, I've got to water my evergreens. And you start dumping tons of water on the plants. You actually want to be doing good routine watering throughout the entire summer. So think of that for next year. But in the meantime, yes, definitely this juniper is probably fine as long as you see that new growth at the tips. But it's the needles that have actually dried up, probably from the heat that we've had this year. And maybe if these plants were planted in July of 2022, then it was probably a lot of winter damage too. We had a lot of snow, and that could have also caused it too. But I'm guessing the plant is going to be fine. May not look so hot for a while, but it'll come back.
Not a lawn and garden question. We didn't ask you to bring your guitar today, but I know the the Abiders are playing today,
right?
No less, right?
Yes, we are. We're playing for a public event called the Carp Fest. And it's not to celebrate carp. It's to help raise funds for a carp project that we're collaborating. We have a neighborhood association out on Lake Minnetonka, the Harrison Bay Association. And we're collaborating with the University of Minnesota Invasive Species Group to do some research on how to eliminate the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands
or
of
thousands
carp
and thousands,
that we have in our end of the bay.
When,
so,
now, when and where now?
We are playing, you can actually, if you have a boat or a kayak or you want to go to Centerview Park in Mound, Minnesota, you can go and listen to us. We're playing right along the lakeside at a private location. And you'll be able to hear us across the water. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, so it should be pretty cool.
Well, you're going to have a perfect day for that.
It's going to be awesome. We all play right from 2 to 5.
Hang on, everybody. We're going to take a break. We're live from the Minnesota State Fair. We have about another half hour of the Lawn and Garden Show live from the fair here. Hang on, everybody. We're going to take a break. We're live from the Minnesota State Fair. We have about another half hour of the Lawn and Garden Show live from the fair here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Some things never change when you're live at the State Fair. Live radio. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We're here every Saturday, not here at the fair, but we're on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Any kind of a lawn or garden question today, because we have Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M and John Traffy, our turf guru. You don't mind that, John.
The guru of green.
Sure. I don't mind it.
Okay. From the U of M. So if you have any kind of a lawn or turf question, today is your day. And we have that very thing right here. This listener is planning on aerating and overseeding in the late fall. Now, I plan on using, they say, a starter fertilizer. Is that okay for the last fertilization application for the winter?
It can be so. And, you know, I would caution the timing of when you're overseeding, because you either want to aerate and overseed, let's say, middle of September, or you want to aerate, you know, middle of September, and then overseed as a what would be considered a dormant seeding in early November. It's really just when you want the grass to germinate. If you're seeding now, you'd want it to germinate, emerge this fall. If you're doing it in early November, you're effectively waiting until the springtime for it to germinate and emerge. And the starter fertilizer, like I said, if you are if it's just a renovation, it's not a new establishment. That starter fertilizer, unless you have a soil test report showing a deficiency of phosphorus, just make sure the starter fertilizer doesn't have phosphorus in it. But otherwise, that's a great strategy and one that's you know, really been used for decades for improving a lawn.
And you've talked about the phosphorus, and that's because we have phosphorus in our soil naturally.
Yeah, Minnesota. We have Minnesota's, for the vast majority of the state, unless you're in kind of the sand plains, the vast majority of Minnesota soils are very high phosphorus. So having phosphorus fertilizer, you know, phosphorus in your fertilizer is literally just, you know, if the soil already has enough, the plants are able to take that up. You're really just wasting money if you're...
Well, that's good to know. I didn't know that before.
One thing, too, I visited the soil testing lab this past week with some master gardeners. And Keith, who runs the lab, he's a research manager there, He is really recommending fall soil tests for a couple reasons. One is that the results are extremely accurate, just like they are throughout the year, but also because you miss that whole rush of spring where you've got a lot of, you know, out at the soil testing lab, they have lots of agricultural tests, they have tons of research tests, but, you know, get your soil tests done now. It's ready for spring. You don't have to worry about it in the spring. Mm. And we just wrote an article about that in our Yard and Garden News from our website.
What's the process of getting your soil tested?
Do you want to address that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the University of Minnesota Soil Testing Laboratory has a webpage for all of the instructions for wherever you're collecting a sample, whether it's your lawn, your garden, or if you have a pasture or an ag field. Any of those spaces might have slightly different recommendations for which test you would have conducted. But really, the process of collecting a soil sample is really simple, really similar across those areas. You're really trying to get a representative sample. So what that means is you'd go out and collect 5 to 10 for an average-sized lawn or garden. 5 to 10 soil samples within the top couple of inches where the plant roots are typically at. And you're going to make a composite sample and then send that in. And that's and typically they're $17 to $20 per soil test sample. You can get the test results back in just sometimes in a week. Sometimes it's a little bit longer than that. But it's a very simple process, and there are instructions online.
Very reasonably priced.
Yeah, wow. And we also have good videos that talk about how to take a soil sample, show you how to do it, and then also how to interpret the results that you get. So that's a brand new video that was out.
Right.
So those are some helpful tools for people because sometimes they are like, it's been a long time since I had chemistry.
Now, is that information available on the website?
It is, well? Yes. It's okay. Under on our website and, under the nutrients section.
All right. Extension.umn.edu.
Extension.umn.edu. You betcha.
Let's grab a phone call from Frank calling in. I believe he's still there, calling in from Roseville. Hi, Frank. What is your question this morning?
Hi, good morning. Yes, this year I've had a mushroom explosion in my yard, and I'm just wondering if you covered this topic before. I didn't hear it, but I'm just wondering what might have caused that.
Well, those mushrooms in your yard are typically coming from what's called fairy ring, and it's a basidiomycete fungi that basically grows in a circle, and that circle just gradually gets bigger and bigger each year. They're most often white or cream-colored mushrooms, but there's really no negative effects to your lawn for where those are at. It's really just kind of the nuisance of the eyesore of seeing them. You know, a lot of people, I have actually been getting a lot of questions about them this year, so for whatever reason, they're a little bit more prominent. But generally, once you have them, it's a soil fungi. It's going to be around forever. There's really nothing you can do to treat them, to try to remove them. But it's not that you would really want to do that anyways because, like I said, there's no negative effects.
I think sometimes two people have been seeing mushrooms growing in their mulch, in their beds, and usually that means that you're overwatering that area. So you can kind of back off on the watering. Remember that mulch does a really good job at holding in moisture. If you see those mushrooms popping up in your mulch, just pick them off, put on some gloves, pick them out, or just kick them over. That's what I do.
Not a big surprise to Julie when we have John on the air that we get a ton of, and we ask for it, right?
Yep. I'm
so
good
we have,
with that.
I'm going to give you a whole string of lawn questions now, and then we'll get back to others. This one, how do I get rid of quack grass? First of all, what's quack grass look like?
So quack grass is, most often you'll notice it first along driveways, sidewalks, or the road. It's a little bit more drought tolerant, a little bit more heat tolerant. And it's a grass that spreads by really long, deep rhizomes. And you can identify it because it grows faster than your typical lawn grasses. And it's a little bit lighter green color. It has what we call clasping auricles. It's how the leaf attaches to the stem of the plant. And as far as how to control it, I have some unfortunate news that there really is no selective measure for trying to remove quack grass from your lawn without hurting the rest of your lawn itself. So non-selective herbicides like glyphosate or Roundup, those are going to be your best option, but that would involve having to reseed that area after controlling the quack grass. But it's going to take several applications over several weeks because of those deep rhizomes.
And it's hard to dig out.
Yeah, and thanks, Julie. So it's really difficult to try to manually pull that weed. It's not something that you can just do from an organic or a manual removal.
Is there ever any discussion about a quackgrass lawn?
There's actually been so quackgrass is considered a noxious weed, so limitations on
what you can't do that then.
So there's limitations on what you can do from a plant breeding and commercialization of a cultivar, right. But there have actually been some attempts for quackgrass for trying to get special exemption for that, because if it's, you know, try and take the strategy of you can't beat them, join them. But I don't think that that's going anywhere just
wow.
yet.
Another turf question this morning. I'm doing dormant seeding this winter. What's the best seed to use?
I would say, you know, it kind of depends on what you're looking to do with the strategy. I think, you know, I've already mentioned the fine fescues and the turf type tall fescues twice this morning. But, you know, I'm a big advocate for those just because I think that they're a great fit for most people's uses of their lawn. Whether they've got three kids and a golden retriever, or they're just using their lawn from an aesthetic or, you know, their own personal enjoyment. So I think those are great fits. If you have a little bit more drought or higher heat conditions, a little bit more traffic, I would lean a little bit more towards the turf-type tall fescues. But for the most part, the fine fescues are super well adapted for most people's uses as well.
And we use both of these grasses out at the Foodscape, which is a new development, a new garden, not development, but a new garden that we've put together out at the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum at the Farm at the Arb. And it's amazing. The tall turf type fescue looks just like a beautiful lawn. It's not like the fescues that the tall fescues that we think of as these big coarse plants.
Yeah, the tall fescue was originally bred for as a forage grass, and so we've been, you know, we have a different strategy for trying to breed turf grasses for lawns, because we don't want a grass that grows and produces a lot of biomass that needs to be mowed all the time. So, you know, our strategies are a little bit different, and so we've been working on breeding finer texture turf type tall fescues that also are low input.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
And I'm glad you brought up the Arboretum. We haven't talked about the Arb today, and that this has got to be a beautiful time to see the Arboretum.
It's a great time to come. You know, late summer is a fabulous place to see some of the more drier, the more drought-tolerant plants, some of the pollinator plants that really are blooming. The prairie is gorgeous. And also the gardens around the building, too. There's, you know, we go through these cycles of we come from the tulip bulbs in the spring, and now we're into these more asters, goldenrod, some of the really beautiful fall colors that we have out there. And the trees, when they start to turn, then we'll be looking at those too. So it's a great time to be there.
And if you're going to get out there, if you're new to the Arboretum, you have to register online. But it really makes parking so easy. I've said it before.
It does, yeah. If you're going to visit the Arboretum, whether you're a member or not, you want to go ahead on arb.umn.edu and just click on Get Tickets. And that's going to step you through the process of getting tickets. If you're a member, they're free. It's simply kind of reserving your space at the Arboretum. And if you are not a member, you may find that you should be a member. It's simply kind of reserving your space at the Arboretum. And if you are not a member, you may find that you should be a member, because then you can it makes it even easier to go to the Arboretum.
It's a great place to visit and bring family and friends.
And bring family. Yeah. It's a great place to bring people from out of town, especially. They're always floored.
Yeah. We 64 degrees now in the Twin Cities. Cool. We feel that the breeze. It's a cool breeze.
I'm not gonna
here
complain.
At the fair. No, but nobody's complaining. We're going to have more lawn and garden questions right after the break, so stay with us here. Live from the fair, News Talk 830 And a good Saturday morning to you. We're back live from the Minnesota State Fair in the midst of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, at least on CCO. Not every Saturday at the fair. It would be kind of lonesome here.
Yeah.
A couple of months from now.
Everything would be closed.
We have Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi, both from the University of Minnesota. We're talking really lawns and gardens. A lot of lawn questions. And I wonder, John and Julie, if...
That's all right. I'm good with that.
If it's maybe because of all this dry weather we've had for the last 2 or 3 years. It's been really tough. Anyway, here's another one. Established lawn, average lawn irrigation system, sandy soil... Mm-hmm. With even/odd watering restrictions, would it be better to water 15 to 20 minutes per zone every other day, or for 30 to 40 minutes per zone every fourth day?
Whoa, that sounds like a softball question, like a canned question, because that is like perfect for trying to educate homeowners on how to water their lawn. So the ideal watering, if you are going to intermittently water your lawn, is to do that deeply and infrequently, because you're trying to train the grass roots to grow deeper. And if you're watering every day or every other day, the plants are going to know that they're just expecting the water, so you know their roots are going to be very shallow. Whereas if you're watering further time frame, you know, further number of days between watering events, the roots for the plants will actually be growing deeper. And you can train them starting in the spring throughout the year. And so training them by watering a little bit higher volume of water more infrequently. And how frequent that is should really depend on your individual site. So this homeowner sounds like they have sandy soils, so it might be a little bit more frequent than somebody who has a silty clay loam soil, for example. But that's the overall strategy, and how much and how often you're watering really is a site-specific question. I would recommend just literally going out and digging before you water and then again after, and just dig down, and you should be able to see how deep is the water getting, and you can train how much or how deep the roots are going
to
grow.
Would it help, too, to maybe top-dress the lawn with some compost to build in some organic matter into the sand?
There can be. I mean, grasses themselves are inherently really good at building organic matter. The natural prairies that we have that made the really great soils that we have in Minnesota and the upper Midwest in general, those were grasses. And they have the same growing pattern that our lawns do, just a high turnover of roots that produce a lot of organic matter over time.
Yeah. All right, Julie, here's one for you. When is the best time to plant new perennials in my flower garden? Should I plant them in the fall or spring? Also, the best time to transplant perennials?
Well, the transplant question depends on the type of perennial. Some perennials really don't transplant very well. They have big, fleshy roots. For example, peonies are difficult to transplant. Butterfly weed, Asclepias tuberosa, is difficult to transplant. Baptisia. But you can do it. We have a good webpage on dividing perennials, and it talks about when to divide plants, and that will give you an idea of some plants don't ever want to be divided, so transplanting them kind of goes along with that you wouldn't want to transplant those either. But you can still plant now in the fall. There's some really good deals at your local garden centers, and so you can still do some planting. You do want to water those plants in well, mulch them. You probably have maybe a couple, 2-3 weeks left to do that, because you want those plants to reestablish their root systems to carry them through the winter, because they're going to go dormant then as soon as it starts to get cold. And we want to be sure that they've established themselves back in those new locations. Spring is really the best time to do the planting, because the plants have the entire summer to get established and go through the growing system, growing season, and then go into natural dormancy. So spring is the best. You can still do some planting now, though.
All right, here's another one for John, Julie. Just purchased a new home full of crabgrass. I know it's an annual, but is there anything I can do about it now? There's too much to pull, and it grows too low for the lawnmower to cut off the seed heads.
It's kind of flat.
Yeah, so crabgrass is a summer annual, so it germinates in the spring, it grows, develops, reproduces in the early fall, and is dropping the seed. It's going to die. It's basically already started to slow down its growth. So controlling it right now is not advised, because it's going to die anyways, especially by the first frost. So the best thing to do with crabgrass is to have a dense, healthy turf to begin with. And I would start doing that this fall with proper fertilization. You could look at using a pre-emergent next spring, a pre-emergent herbicide. But I would honestly just try to get a solid lawn established. Make sure you have a proper mowing height of 3 to 4 inches at least, because crabgrass loves a lower mowing height for turf. So those are your cultural practices. There are some, like I said, pre-emergent herbicides for next spring. But the best defense, or the best thing, weed control mechanism, is a dense, healthy turf.
You know, we have a few questions about trees. Folks wondering, is this diseased, or could it be getting a disease? Would you recommend getting an arborist out to your house?
Yeah, absolutely. In Minnesota, we're fortunate to have a lot of certified arborists. An arborist is kind of like a tree doctor. They go out, they assess trees. They can look at a tree and assess it for health. They can assess it for structure if you're concerned it might be hazardous. And they can also do pruning for you. And they can also advise on planting, too, and also on types of trees that would be good for your location. So a certified arborist is really valuable. You can find information on that. We have a good webpage on extension.umn.edu called How to Hire a Tree Care Professional. And there's a link there where you can put in your zip code and come up with any and all arborists that are in your area. So it gives you a head start. It's also good if you see people working with tree care companies, and you can ask, you know, if you have friends or neighbors who are having their trees pruned. We just did this on our street. You might want to kind of collaborate with them or find out who they're using to. And that word of mouth is really helpful as well.
A couple of minutes to go on the show here from the fair, and my week and my whole week would not be complete if we didn't attack Creeping Charlie a little bit here. It says, I like to renew my lawn, which is overtaken by Creeping Charlie and crabgrass. I'm thinking of planting buffalo grass. Are you familiar with buffalo grass, and do you think it would work in our climate?
So buffalo grass, I think it largely depends on where this question is coming from. So it is a native turf grass. It's one of the only native turf grasses. It's very low input, but it's a little bit more difficult to establish. It grows best in kind of the western, southwestern, southern parts of Minnesota. So it's a warm season turf grass. It grows best in the summertime. But it is a very low input grass that spreads and creeps and can do well. As far as the Creeping Charlie is concerned, a lot of times that is site specific. So it likes shadier, wetter soils. So if you if you have those conditions, consider trying to do something to alleviate that problem. Otherwise, there are chemical options for trying to control it. Triclopyr is the name of the active ingredient, the ibuprofen to Advil, that is found in the herbicide. Triclopyr is the name. That's the one that works best. It's best to try to control it this fall or in the fall. And it might take a couple of applications to do that.
All right, we've got 60 seconds to go. Julie, the Abiders are appearing when and where
today?
We're
playing at Carp Fest on Lake Minnetonka at Harrison Bay. And if you got a boat or a kayak or want to go to Centerview Park, you can listen to us from Lakeside. And we start at 2 o'clock.
Get to the Arboretum. That's another point I wanted to make.
Yes, get a reservation for that.
And by all means, check out the university website.
Right.
Give us that again, would you please?
Extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden.
Any final thoughts, John, about maybe getting lawn aerated this fall?
Yeah, it's a pretty good strategy for relieving compaction. It doesn't help much with thatch, but soil compaction, and it can help with renovating an area.
And you've got some information about taking care of your lawns on the website as well, right?
Right.
And
you can visit John in the turf booth.
Yeah,
here
at the State Fair in the Ag Hort Building, we've got turf experts that are answering questions all day, every day. We're between the Apples and the Brewers Guild. So.
Perfect.
Good place to be. All right, good. Thank you both. Good to see you both, Julie and John.
Good to see you, Denny. Thank you.
Thank you.
Get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lindis is going to be joining me live here on our porch or our veranda here at our broadcast center here at the Minnesota State Fair. If you're coming out today, you've got a beautiful day to do that. We have an expected sunshine-filled day with highs near 74, going to be 79 tomorrow. Right now on CCO, sunny.